You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome back to me. Ha! Just kidding. But welcome back to you. Thanks for tuning in. Thank you all for hanging out with our friend Jerry Bader last week, who filled in for me, and I appreciate that very much. You know, he's someone who is definitely transitioned into a different life than what he had before, and it's interesting to see, you know, where he's been and where he's going and where he currently is. And I'm really proud of him for on so many, you know, notes. But I'm really proud to see how he has such a larger scope of vision and where he is now. So thank you, Jerry, for hanging out with us and commanding the ship. And I thought he did really, really well. If you want to listen to that episode, you sure can. It's all available online, civicmedia.us, where all of our episodes live, like this one. I was last week, we took a trip to the East Coast, New York, Boston. I'll talk about that in the last segment, and I'll give you my takeaways and all that good stuff. But first, I got another banger. I tell you what, this is just, we get home run after home run here. This guy, when I was a Brown County supervisor many, many years ago, I had the honor to really get to know this dude. And now he's here. The handcuffs and the shackles are off because he's retired now. He was a former reporter for the Green Bay Press Gazette. Everyone's favorite reporter, Doug Schneider, is here with us. What's up, buddy?
No pressure there, Mark Becker.
No pressure. No. And, you know, it's what I wanted to do is not talk a ton because I this is going to be interesting, you know, just open it up, see where it goes. And I haven't seen you guys. Was it years? It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a couple years since I've been in Green Bay. Moved out a couple years ago, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. So what did you do when you left Green Bay?
Well, I went to upstate New York.
You're from there, right?
No, I'm not. I'm from some place with a team that Packers fans dislike.
Oh.
That I also dislike as well.
Chicago, okay.
Yep. The nameless face of Chicago suburbs. And so I went back to upstate New York, married my longtime girlfriend, and bought a house and was not planning to continue working in media, but I got a call from a friend of mine saying, hey, can you help out? And so I worked at a small paper in the middle of nowhere for 15 months and was just about getting sick of driving 45 minutes one way a day. Yeah, it was not a heck of a lot
That's
of fun,
tough.
Especially when it was snowing like crazy. One of the things I was promised and I was foolish enough to say.
Well, at least it doesn't snow too much in upstate New York, right?
Yeah, one of the selling points was we didn't get a lot of snow last winter.
Okay.
But it was not true for the winter of 24-25.
Yeah, one term we don't have here is bomb cyclone, I don't think. He shuts his eyes.
This is the sound of me rolling my eyes.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So for the listeners here, what I want to talk about your career a little bit. What got you started in media and in writing and being an award-winning investigative journalist? Because you are.
How long you got?
We got an hour.
I went to the Newhouse School at Syracuse University with plans to go into this business.
So it was a goal to get into
was convinced fairly quickly that I did not want to be a line in the credits for a long time. So fell in love, took a job in scenic Carbondale, Pennsylvania, coal country.
Yeah.
And started from there. And after a couple of years, moved up into dailies and eventually really got the bug in terms of doing hard-hitting journalism and covered some interesting stories, dead giraffes and things like that.
Was Carbondale, that's a pioneer city, right?
It is.
There we go, see? I know they kind of like started the Industrial Revolution or one of the, right?
It was big in coal country. It was a significant railroad town for a while, as much as Pennsylvania is. You know, got used to dealing with public there. Did not learn a lot about journalism.
Oh, okay.
And moved to Western New York and Batavia, which was also pretty challenging.
Yeah.
But it was well placed in terms of getting to baseball games and things like that. Because you had Buffalo and Rochester both had significant minor league teams.
Buffalo Stadium's cool. We went there on our honeymoon to Buffalo. It's because I love wings. No, it's because
going to say you have an interesting life, Mark.
I do. No, because we wanted to see Niagara Falls. And it turns out you need a passport to really see them well. And my wife didn't have, she didn't have a passport, and so we couldn't.
Why didn't you not ask me beforehand? I would have told you the Canadian side is better.
Why? I know. I didn't think of that. But the Anchor Bar was cool. Wings were really good. You know, done the right way. Except it looked like I had a third eye when I asked him for ranch.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I was going to say you could be a Charlie Barron sketch.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, apparently you can't do that in Buffalo. It's blue cheese.
Indeed it is.
When we were in New York, I did that again, and I asked for ranch, and they brought me blue cheese. It was not very, wasn't very good. Got to be honest, and I don't know, but
there's a lot of good Italian food in Buffalo too. If you ever get back there.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I liked Buffalo. Buffalo was a really cool town.
Good working class town, a lot of character. Avoid it like crazy in the winter.
Yeah. Yeah, that was you see some of the stuff that that happens over there. We follow a guy that does a lot of storm chasing, and they got to do something in the wintertime, and so he like chases these massive snowstorms, and you see the stuff that happens in Buffalo, and it's like, oh my God, what they get is just gnarly.
Yeah, a lot of people in my new life say, you know, well, isn't Green Bay as snowy as Syracuse was? And it's nowhere close.
Nowhere close.
Yep.
Wow. So I want to talk about a couple of different things, and I think you have such a unique perspective of kind of the state of play in media. You know, where people's trust lies and why. And I do want to get into that and all that. I don't think I've ever asked you that. What was the trigger thing for you? It was like, I want to do that. I want to be a reporter. I know you said you didn't want to be on the credits. You wanted the byline, which I totally, that's, yeah. What got you into reporting?
I don't know. I think it was a bunch of teachers in my teenage years telling me, you really should write for a living.
Yeah.
And eventually I worked with some outstanding young journalists that I was the old guy at 28 in Glens Falls, New York, which is a really scary thought.
Yeah.
But there were some people who were tackling big projects, and, you know, we had a crazy in a good way editor who would, you know, send people to the political conventions and stuff.
Oh, cool.
And so people were breaking some significant stories, and I eventually realized, hey, I want to do this, and I have the chops to do it. And but for a while it was, you know, significant crime and public safety issues. So
in Buffalo?
No.
Okay.
It's like an hour north of Albany.
Okay.
In a town that 4 newspapers covered.
Wow.
So it was competitive as heck. It was the gateway to Lake George. It was, you know, a couple hours from Montreal, several hours from Boston. So it was a really cool place to be.
I mean, that the newspaper industry is, I mean, think of it when you started to where it is now. I mean, I remember my growing up, my dad would get, because the Press Gazette had like a morning paper and an afternoon paper.
Yes, the good old days.
Yeah. And so it was a huge, it was like a seismic shift in our family when we went from the morning paper to the afternoon paper.
Why didn't you change?
My dad worked, he was a mailman. And so he wanted to get the news when he was home and relaxing and his feet up and all of that stuff. And so the 4 o'clock paper was great because it was up to date. It was the stuff that happened. But then it also was the latest breaking stuff that, it worked out really well. We loved the Press Gazette. I mean, it was an amazing paper. I'm sure it still is. But there was nothing quite like, you know, the sound of the paper. You open it up and read. It was, and that's almost non-existent now.
It is existent, but it, when is news old in your mind?
30 seconds after it's printed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
A couple seconds after you read it.
Right. Well, and especially, you know, not to make everything about the orange dude, but the news cycle, and I think it's by design, the news cycle under him now, and like it was 4 years ago, is just, it is... it's fluid. It doesn't stop. It's just, you know, and I have my opinions on why, and we'll pick it up after the break here. We're talking with Doug Schneider, retired investigative journalist for the Green Bay Press Gazette. We're going to talk about, distrust in the media. We're going to hear some sweet stories of your time in the trenches, and looking forward to that. So we'll see you back here after the break on the Civic Media Network. You're listening to Rational Revolution.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution and the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm your host, Mark Becker. We're talking with my friend and everyone's favorite reporter, award-winning reporter, Doug Schneider, who is he has since retired. This is Doug's revenge tour. See, as Frank Costanza would say, I've got a lot of problems with you people, and you're going to hear about it. This is, you have the opportunity here, should you take it. But I wanted to talk, as we were on the other side of the break, about, you know, how newspaper has changed, you know, and think about where it was when you started to where it is now.
Basically, initially you like had to get the local paper, you know, it was essential.
Yeah.
And much of newspapering relied on that. One of the first papers I worked at was dependent on, you know, when we said, you know, 90 some percentage of the local market reads our paper, and
jeez,
we certainly, there were a lot of people who believed everything that they saw and could not differentiate between the editorial page and the news columns, and that was sort of scary.
Yeah.
but now you don't have to do that anymore. You certainly can just jump on the internet. You can get
everything's the editorial page.
Text alerts.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that requires a J school degree or anything like that, a solid education. I'm reading a lot of stuff now where, you know, mainstream media is writing about somebody at a Trump press conference who is, quote, not a traditional reporter.
Right.
And so these guys lead their questions with, you know, basically you call him the orange man, you know, citing some point that he's made or allegation that he's made. And there's no, I can't say there's no, but there's little fact checking and things like that. So that's kind of where we are.
How does a paper who, I mean, because when I, even today, when I looked at where the best source for journalism was, without a doubt, it is the papers. It's the Washington Post, the New York Times. It's here, the Press Gazette, because you don't, you know, yes, you have reporters going out and doing a 30-second hit on a piece of news, but as a reporter, you have time to be careful and select your words, and you don't have that, you know, reporter that's going out that has a degree in television writing a really in-depth story. So where I get my news, if I want it to be, and I do, I try to be the most informed person that I can, it is from the paper sources, from the Post and the Times and the Press Gazette. But I don't, do people care about that anymore?
I think that's the essential question. And in a lot of cases, people do not care. And there are a lot of stereotypes being forwarded about, you know, oh, these guys, this medium, you know, comes at it from this perspective.
Right.
Most important thing you have as a reporter is trust in your work. And you don't see a lot of people establishing trust or, you know, measuring trust in that people provide, which is a really bad answer.
No, I mean, it's true though, and the trying to, you know, get to where a place of truth and accepted fact, it's almost impossible these days, you know, because like, you can find any news place to tell you whatever you want to hear.
Absolutely.
And that's dangerous. You know, like.
Well, I will push back a little bit on that and say that it's dangerous if people are not thinking about it or dependent on whoever is the first to report something or only report something. If you're only reading one network, if you're only reading one newspaper, if you're only reliant on one radio station or, you know, news outlets or, you know, news alerts, you're not particularly interesting and your worldview is not particularly
right
advanced.
But I think, you know, when you get into like where we are, you have all these people that care about fake news and all of that. You know, that was years ago where that kind of started. But the problem is that there are places that have set up their own echo chambers, OANN and Newsmax and Truth Social. And like Fox News now is too left-wing for some of these people. And, you know, like that is inherently, I think, a danger. Because, yes, I think you should. If you just listen to CNN, you're not. That's not okay. You know what I mean? So I totally agree with that. But then you have people like Steve Bannon and you know, that dude that looks like the Riddler, And they've realized how much money they can make from telling people what they want to hear and calling it news and calling it truth and fact when it's the editorial page of the newspaper has more fact than what they're showing people on television.
There used to be a real strong line between news slash fact and opinion. And, you know, the editorial page was set off independently.
Right. And there's a board. They had editorial boards that would police that.
Absolutely.
What happened to that?
I think it fell victim to economics, decline in staffing. You know, you can't hire as many people. So, you know, we're gonna cut somewhere. And one of the places that people got cut was in editorial, in opinion. So that's a drawback.
Yeah, we're talking with Doug Schneider, award-winning journalist from the Press Gazette, amongst others. And how did you see this evolution happening in news?
Be more specific with that question, please.
God, you're a good reporter. How did you see the big shift from people reading periodicals at a very scheduled pace to moving away from the newspaper and consuming at their own leisure?
Time is money in this case, and people saw opportunities. You know, if you knew the PG was not going to publish until tomorrow, you know, there were a lot of times in Binghamton, which was my job before, place I worked before Green Bay, you know, one of the things we did was check the 11 o'clock newscast and
nice.
Did not see any headlines that we had sent to print.
Wow.
For publication tomorrow.
Wow. We're talking about Doug Schneider here on the Civic Media Network and Rational Revolution. We're gonna talk about what does media have to do to get back into to where that truth is. And Mark Becker will talk about this right after this. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. You got Mark Becker, my friend Doug Schneider, former reporter here for the Green Bay Press Gazette. I think you have such a unique perspective on where the media has to go and what is a fact today?
That is a great question, and I'm not sure I can answer it well. I mean, we've said that credibility and trust is the essence of what reporters do. But in terms of how, I mean, the solution there is every newspaper, every media outlet faces the same challenge. What are we going to do to build audience, attract eyeballs, sell commercial space? And if anybody had the answers to that, you know, we'd all be doing it. And I would recommend that you read the new book from the recently retired editor of the New York Times. Before that, he edited the Washington Post in terms of, you know, he was the editor on the Spotlight series
that they did
that became a movie. So,
yeah.
And I'm blanking on the title. I apologize.
No, that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, that, I think that would. I don't know. It's a billion-dollar question. Really, is how do we move forward and where do we get trust and all of that? I wanted to get to some lighthearted fun and see like what some stories from your time in the trenches, you know, as you covered are always interesting. Brown County Board and the local government here. I got to meet you at when I was the county supervisor, and
Actually, we met when you were
a party
official.
That's right. Yeah, that and was a different life.
The initial story was I tweeted something. I was doing the late cops reporting, and there was a storm that blew in on the far east side of Green Bay, and you were living out beyond UWGB, and you responded to my tweet, and we got talking about it, and there was that.
Scanner squawk, I think.
That was not a scanner
squawk. Okay. Yeah.
Shall you explain that or shall I?
Which one? What storm was that? You explain that.
It was early in the past decade. It was heavy weather, wind, near the golf course at UWGB, and there were some concerns that there were going to be tornadoes and injuries and things like that.
Yeah.
Scanner squawk is just tweets related to the police scanner.
Yes, that's right.
On Green Bay Packers game day.
Did you have any other fun stories from your time covering our? This is in Brown County for those, because this is all over Wisconsin. We have a lot of spicy stupidity in our local government. And we have a storied history of I can't say the right words really, but just it's interesting. And what anything stick out?
One of the things I was gonna mention was the email story involving the Brown County Board, where this was great work, and it won a first place from the Wisconsin Association for the whatever the year was. I think it was like 2014 or 2018. Yep.
It was 14.
Don't remember that, but one of the long-running complaints from the county board and some of the more progressive members was that supervisors are not accountable to their constituents. They'd have to run every 2 years, and then a constituent couldn't get an email answered.
Yep.
So I tracked down the person who ran IT for the county and said, I'm thinking about doing a story. How can I measure this? And the guy was great. He said, well, I can look at how often supervisors are using their email. So I was able to write a lead saying, if you had emailed the supervisor at his official account, you didn't get a response because he has not opened his email account in more than 5 years. And I know the editors at our place were just blown away, You can't be serious. Do you need to check this 13 more times to narrow that down? Like, no, I'm serious. We got that. Got hard data saying that. But, you were not one of the offenders.
Yes. Right. And that's so frustrating because, when we were a county supervisor and my first meeting that I took was with the library, and here I am and I was former Republican chairman, and then I walked into the library with the director of the library and got my socks blown off at the need. It's not just people that are hanging around. No, people need the library because if they're down and out, they need a place to apply for a job, and some people need that for a place to improve their lives, And
yes, we had a supervisor while you were on the board who thought that the library was a place to store, and I quote, books.
Yeah, and this is the same supervisor who we would get these big packets with hundreds of pages of stuff every meeting. And there was you open this up, you study this packet so you know what you're going to talk about.
You're supposed to study.
And the most annoying thing happened. At 5 minutes before, this freaking guy who's an absolute moron, and I think he's elected back on the board, so you can check that. You would hear this. And that's him opening up the freaking packet that he never looked at and is supposed to have an informed opinion on the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. And here this moron is just opening it up for the first time. And the people in his district are so horribly represented by this guy, who is still there. So I'd love to talk about that. But that's not uncommon.
They actually unelected him during one term. But 2 years later, he ran again and was the recipient of significant donations from an out-of-town group of people or organization and was reelected at that point.
Right. Right. And it's so sad because, like, you know, he's someone that will vote against every budget. He doesn't even know what's in it. He just knows, we're going to spend money. Nope. You know, thinks that the library is a place that books go. You know, like, and to hear some of the comments that he makes outside of the meeting hall and in private session, it was really disheartening. Here we're talking with reporter Doug Schneider. What other fun things do you have?
Toward the end, I covered a lot of big breaking news. The woman who was kidnapped and held hostage for more than a month. It was probably for 3 months in western Wisconsin.
Jamie Kloss.
Jamie Kloss, yes, thank you. After a young man, I don't want to call him a kid, but he was in his early 20s, drove past a bus stop, decided she was based on a glance, basically.
That's insane.
That she was the love of his life, loaded up a couple guns, went to her house, killed her dad through the front door, forced his way into the house and killed her mother as she was cowering, protecting her daughter. And basically tossed the girl in the trunk of his car and drove to a summer cottage that his family owned, like 90 miles away. Jesus. And held her for several days and did a lot of horrible things to her.
I forgot that you covered that.
Yeah, that was a learning experience.
That stuff's got to stick with you, you know? You're in that business for a long time. I would imagine there's some PTSD a little bit.
I don't know. that was a heavy sigh, legitimate sigh.
Yeah.
But there's, I mean, obviously 9/11 was the most significant story that I covered. In, you know, upstate New York, we had like 8 people from our area who were killed in the bombings, the attacks. But you heard some stories as you reported the piece. You know, just going, my job that day was to go to the airport and interview people who were ground stopped, which means get your plane on the ground as soon as possible. And these people flew into Binghamton, which is a smallish airport, and you know, people were in line at the car rental place hoping they could get a car and drive home because they were miles from anywhere. But then, you know, the story kept echoing. And, you know, years later, I was talking to people who, you know, one guy had been working in New York City and volunteered. I don't think he was officially a volunteer, but he'd gone to the debris site and helped. You know, dug through the rubble looking for bodies. And, you know, now the guy is dealing with a case of lung cancer.
Oh, sure.
So, you know, there were cases like that. But,
jeez.
Yeah, that was you spent, like, we published a couple of extras that day, and both of them sold out. And, you know, you basically worked, I don't want to say around the clock because we were allowed to go home and sleep a couple of times. But, you know, you did like 3 days of solid reporting. And that was like the first time I cried, where I went to my girlfriend's house and, you know, watched a report and was just, you know, bawling because, you know, the degree of sadness and trauma that happened. And
that was heavy for everybody. I can't imagine being in New York at that time. I mean, we were just there at the 9/11 memorial. That's the second time I've been there. And you could feel, and I was a freshman in high school, so you could really feel like, holy crap. I remember I could live that day like it was yesterday, you know.
I met a friend and went to a hockey game shortly after the attack, and there was still stuff burning down there. Yeah. And it's just mind-boggling, and I've not been back since.
You have any other 30-second fun stories?
I was going to say, this is not fun.
No.
One of the ways that it that story kept echoing for us that the AP moved the list of victims from the Pentagon. And so it just came off the wire, and there was a printer in the newsroom, our newsroom, in Binghamton, and somebody said, you know, hey, we've got the first casualty list, and that was handed to me. And the first name on the list was somebody who had gone to school in Vestal, New York, which is a suburb of Binghamton, and had actually, graduated in a friend of mine's class.
Oh, my God.
And so, you know, you picked up the phone and started dialing.
Jeez. Well, I really appreciate your time here, and we're gonna go to lunch after this. It's so good to see you, and I hope good things for media, you know, from here on out, and I know that your place in it was sacred to this area for sure. Doug Schneider is my guest. We got my musings here on the Rational Revolution, the Civic Media Network, coming up next.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Makes sense that that song is in leading up to this segment, because this is my musings, and I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about what we did last week and kind of what my takeaway was, and not that you care, but I hope you do because you're listening here on the Civic Media Network. My dear thanks to Doug Schneider for spending some time with us. It was, and I got to talk to him for another hour or two because the time that I got to know him really well was when I was a county supervisor, and I wish we would have talked more about that because, the media especially is under such a, it's such a fluid arena, and trying to differentiate fact from crap, and I can't imagine being in that space and screaming from every rooftop that you can that you write something and you pour your heart and soul into it and to differentiate what's real from what's not, only for people to go on Twitter and call you a, fake news and all of that. That would be a tough place to be, to punch a clock and then get punched in the face repeatedly every day. That's hard. That's really hard. And differentiating and finding the truth shouldn't be a quest that would make Don Quixote, envious. But I wanted to tell you about our quest that we had as a family this past weekend. We went to Boston last year and spent a week there and really fell in love with the area and fell in love with the people and fell in love with the city. And so we wanted to go back. And, you know, my kids said the whole time, we missed Boston this whole year, past year. We missed Boston, missed Boston. We fell in love with the Red Sox, which is very easy to do because they're an amazing team with a really historic stadium. Just, you know, if you like the Packers, that's kind of a good place to spend your baseball likings. And they also wanted to go check out New York City. And so we did that too. So it was New York for a few days, and then it was Boston. And you know, New York was incredible. It's so huge. It's such a big place that, I mean, you can get lost in it so easily. And the two places can't really compare. You know, New York is, it just doesn't stop. And Boston is the most walkable city in the country. And, you know, it has a population the size of Milwaukee. The metro is massive, though. The metro is millions and millions of people. And it's like 3-4 times the size of Milwaukee. But anyway. But as I was there, you know, you get hit with the realization of time and, you know, where you are and what you're doing and kids growing up and all of that. And I think that the most precious commodity that we all have is not what we have, but it's the time that we have. And seeing, you know, children grow up and seeing their perspectives change, I think that the most important thing that we can give to people is our time. But the most important thing that we can have is the right perspective, right? And, you know, because if you have perspective that allows you to appreciate things in the best way you can, it allows you to understand what you have left. You can understand what you want to give away when everything goes bye-bye. And I think what's so neat and I love about my wife and what we're doing for our children is, you know, we can give them a perspective that not a lot of people have. I don't know, maybe they do, but, you know, my kids can see what other people live like. And we've gone to, you know, Boston and New York, and we've gone to Traverse City, and we've gone to Chicago, we've been in Milwaukee and Madison, and we've allowed them not just to experience like touristy crap, but we want to show them, well, this is where people live. This is what life is like. This is the view from outside of our bubble that we have and where we live. And I think that that's such an important thing for them. But then as their perspectives grow, it breaks my heart because I know that they're growing and they're going. And that's, I mean, it's cool, but it really sucks. Because as I heard Joe Biden say, actually, when he talked about his son, Beau, and he said, Beau was his left arm to his right. And he was such an important part of his life and such, you know, the closeness that they had is something that, I mean, my kid's 7, my son, Ben, we're very, very close. And this is nothing my wife would go on for an hour about. Oh, you're, you know, you trade him, this. But, you know, to know that one day I'm going to be dad. I'm not going to be, hey, dad, you know, and like those things. And so having a perspective that of one that is filled with gratitude and appreciation and an understanding of time, having that perspective really allows me and has allowed me to appreciate the time that I have. And I'm not like a Dear Abby or whatever, but if there's something that I can share with you about how important perspective is. My God, that opens up such a peace and an appreciation of where you are and an understanding of where you're going. And I really hope that for all of you to have that perspective and have that understanding, because that allows you to do so much more. You know, if you bring it back to this radio show about politics, that allows you to meet people where they're at. And it gives you a perspective of how you can change a mind. And it might give you a perspective of, I can't change this mind, and an understanding of, it's okay that I don't. Have a great perspective, and that'll give you peace. Peace, friends. Peace. Hey, we'll see you next week. I appreciate you being here. Thank you, Doug Schneider, for your time. We'll see you next week on the Civic Media Network. This is Mark Becker for the Rational Revolution. See ya.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.